New Zealanders want and deserve a transparent and comprehensive inquiry into the COVID-19 response. Not another whitewash. That's why RCR is bringing you a special segment aimed at examining the terms of reference, as well as what the country's best and brightest minds believe should be put on the table and why. The inquiry sessions will endeavour to unpack everything we already know and all the things we still don't know about how the COVID response was handled and what needs to be included in any new inquiry so that New Zealanders can get answers, justice and a future free from government overreach. Welcome to the inquiry sessions.
So today I'm talking to a woman, Kathy, who is happy to share her own personal experience with the deadline coming up for the COVID inquiry. Kathy, I know this was an intense time for you, especially around your mother. So we're happy to hear whatever you're happy to share.
Thanks very much, Natalie. I think the important thing that I want to share is there have been many that have been absolutely decimated through the COVID period and with so many of the sanctions. I think the thing I want to share is belief independent. Whether you were pro-vaccine, con-vaccine, I think it was the human rights element that came towards caring for our loved ones when they were in a state where they needed a family around them. And I refer to my mum suddenly being admitted into a hospital environment. She had had a massive stroke, which was absolutely unexpected. I'd seen her the week before and she was still a bundle of organisation and a bundle of direction, giving instructions to the family. And being called to say that your mother's in an environment in a hospital is not something anyone actually wants to hear. So on that first day, I was given access, along with some of my siblings, to see Mum in that emergency ward. And at that point in time, Mum was assessed and checked over. And at a point in time, she was passed through to the stroke ward, where we didn't know, but she was going to be for almost two and a bit months after that event. Day one was fine, and I want to place it into context, the context being that this event, and I'll call it a stroke event, happened in the July of 2022. And as we're looking at July 2022, by that stage, the borders had already opened up. And by that stage, we'd gone through some of the massive lockdowns that were. And so being confronted at a place where you're under stress because a family member is unwell. And in my heart, I actually knew that Mum didn't want to live in the body that was now hers. And I could see that she was not making the progress that everyone had hoped her to make. So in my heart, I had a strong belief this was her last days. Mm. And that was contrary to what some of the doctors said. But day one in the stroke ward, we were quickly pulled aside and informed that we needed to make a decision around only one family member having access to Mum. And what do I mean by one family member? I'm going to repeat that, one family member. We had to choose for the duration of my mother's stay, which turned out to be many, many, many weeks, only one family member with access to her. So imagine, Natalie, in your situation, you've got multiple sisters. Imagine sitting down with your sisters and making a decision which sibling can have access to your mother. We went through the process of choosing the sibling that was the closest, but the amount of stress that it placed on that one person was huge. Now, in the days that we had that last period where we had that access to Mum, in the day I was still in the hospital, I remember a duty administration lady coming over to me and being very confrontational and pointing at me going, you need to make a decision as to who's the only person that's going to see your mother. She had no feeling, she had no support, she had no remorse. She was draconian in her manner, and her only outcome was to enforce her rule on our family. And so I know the impact that that had on my children. My children were not used to their mother being spoken to in that way. And they were also intently angry, because when I then went in to have seen my mum, and I was still given a limited level of access on those first few days, apparently they then targeted my children with the intent of saying, your mother needs to make a decision, you know, we need to have an answer as to who can be here. Now, who does that to a 16-year-old? No one should be doing that to a 16-year-old. Roll on the days, we managed to get through talking to hospital chaplaincy services, we managed to get a little bit more access. So we got access to mum for, I think she had the stroke on the Tuesday, we managed to get access to the Friday. And then on the Friday, we were stopped from seeing mum. Now, the other things that were so unsympathetic along the time was that at the point in time where we were able to see mum, or that people could be with mum, and they said, or call her. Well, if a person's had a stroke, has got very little ability to speak, certainly can't hold up a device, let alone have a FaceTime call with you, and that doesn't nourish the soul. And it certainly wouldn't have nourished my mother's soul, because she was cut off from the family that would have meant the most to her. So I did what I thought I should do, and that was I fought to try and get, and I hate using the word fight, but it was the only thing that I knew I could do. So who did I approach? I approached the hospital patient advocacy authorities. And, you know, they threw their hands up and said, you're not the only one wanting to see family who couldn't see family. Now, we were dealing with the Waikato Health Board at this stage. And I had really close contacts into the Auckland Hospital Board. And I knew that the Auckland method of dealing with patients at this point in time was so different. Auckland's philosophy was you could have one person per time visiting. Mm. So Natalie, you and I are siblings, we're sisters. You could go and see mum, and then you would come out.
Yeah.
And then I could go and see mum on the same day. So it was, you could swap about as long as there weren't multiple people around her bedside, but not the Waikato area. As I'll repeat it, one person per patient per stay, and mum was there for weeks. So I started to learn a little bit about the process, and I then took it through to the Human Rights Commission. I also sent multiple messages and letters out to many of the parliamentarians and people that were representing us in government. And I will take my hat off to Simon O'Connor, and I still will, because of all the emails that I sent out, he, as our local MP, was the only one that absolutely responded to my plea. But he was powerless to do anything, because what they then said was this was a hospital decision. And again, I note that the hospital's decision was not equivalent to any other hospital that I was aware of. It was very, very unique and very isolated in terms of their approach. And I feel very draconian. After what was, and I forget all the time periods, but I think about 4 weeks, I then managed to make contact with a human rights barrister. And I'd learned at this point in time that the medical doctors aren't the ones that make decisions over the ward. It's actually the nurses. And so under the guise of the human rights barrister, I remodeled my letter slightly, and I sent it to the Waikato Health Board. And as I sent it to the Waikato Health Board, I, within 24 hours, had a response, and it gave us more access to mum. But the access still wasn't at the same level of access as we would have had in the Auckland environment. So in the Auckland environment, again, I repeat, we could have one person per visit. What we were then given is one sibling, identified sibling, who was noted on the door to be able to have access on that particular day for a day. So myself, who traveled to the Waikato, again, there was so much unjust happening in that environment. And the unjust was I would travel, I would be there for the hospital visiting hours, and then I would be forced to leave the hospital, sit in my car for 3 or 4 hours because the visiting hours was again that afternoon. However, if I had pleaded to my country of origin, which was South Africa, and I pleaded on some form of cultural background that mum needed somebody around her for other purposes, I would have had more access to mum on the days that I could have seen her. To cut a long story short, I believe the day that I saw mum first was the day she had another stroke in front of me. And I know that that also set her back tremendously in terms of the path that she passed away a few weeks later. However, I also know that the draconian measures implemented by that hospital robbed myself and robbed my mum's siblings, my mum's family, from being with her in her last days when she could have had comfort from that environment. And even though we were saying we were trying to get to her, I'm not quite sure that she had a comprehension of that. So whilst I know that many people have had many other levels of impact on their life, I never want a family to go through that again because it's cruel. It's absolutely cruel, and it's just not okay.
It added so much stress during what was already such a stressful time for the family. What about the kids, the grandkids? So the grandkids weren't able to see her, or could they take one of those designated times once you were able to swap?
No grandchildren were allowed to see her. So it was only the siblings, as in the immediate children, that were able to see her. And it was only when we were then passed into end-of-life care, which was right at the end-of-life care, and then we moved into palliative care. It was only at that point in time that the family were given more access to her. And it boggles the mind. Absolutely boggles the mind that because of a bureaucratic regulation, the family can't enter the ward, but you move it to end of life care and the family can enter the ward. Mm-hmm. It doesn't make any sense.
Well, it's so, looking back on it, Kathy, I mean, I really feel for you. And the sad thing is so many other people had a different variation of something like that. They couldn't get access to their loved ones. And it just magnified what was already so stressful. And what I'm hearing from you is lack of sympathy from the staff, or that one particular woman, lack of compassion, and this draconian implementation of the rules. Oh, it's such a tragic experience for you.
Absolutely, Natalie. And I might even go as far as in, and I'm going to talk generally, although it could or may not apply to my specific situation. But when you have a narcissistic person responsible for a gate to people that they want to get to, I think that absolutely elevates the narcissistic tendency to want to control, bully, push back, and be the draconian that in normal days they weren't able to be.
Mm-hmm.
And in particular, when the health authorities at a national level were not pushing down the same rules. Because again, I'll repeat, if mum had been in a different hospital, the rules placed upon visiting would have been very, very different. And again, I want to highlight that this was in July of 2022, and by May of 2022, our borders were starting to open again. So this wasn't in the midst of COVID with all the paranoia that was around it. This was starting to move out towards the tail end of COVID. I did, however, also have a lady come to me through that period, and what she shared with me was also mind-blowing. So this is a recited story, but it gives you the elements of people not being logical in terms of the approach to those wards. It was a lady who had sent her child to camp. Lady was Auckland-based. The camp was in the Waikato. In the camp had gone on. The child had had an anaphylactic attack. The child was sent to the local Waikato hospital with its anaphylactic attack. The parent on duty, random parent who had happened to put up her or his hand to say, I'll be parent help, was assigned with the visit with the child to the hospital, sitting with the child while the child was being treated for anaphylaxis. The mother rushed through from Auckland to get to her child. The mother was refused entry to the emergency ward because there was already someone with the child.
That's where I thought that story was going. Oh my gosh.
Can you believe it? How can you go, mother, there's already a random adult with your child and you cannot come in to go and see the child?
Unbelievable. So, and there's so many unbelievable stories like that out there. Kathy, one thing I want to commend you on, and I guess acknowledge as well, is back to your own experience with your mom. Not everybody has the confidence or that kind of warrior within that you were able to demonstrate, and the skills in terms of the logistics and the admin and writing, you know, to Simon O'Connor and calling upon lawyers and such. I mean, the average person would just be like, okay, well, I guess I can't see my mom. And then they would be heartbroken. You, I guess, at least were able to do something and be very proactive. And you did get a bit of a change. You did make it such that each sibling was able to have a turn. Although it wasn't ideal, it was better than what they were giving you in the first place. Most people wouldn't be able to, I guess, not so much fight back, but kind of really question and move things forward. Most people just wouldn't, they just have to take what they were given. And most people weren't given much at all.
And I think that is something I feel we should be learning from this process, that if something does not feel right, don't sit with it and accept it. You know, even in those days where I was communicating with all those channels, I had pushback from my siblings, and rightly so, because you've got your parent in their care, and that being the Waikato Health, the Waikato Hospital care. You don't want to put your parents' well-being and welfare at risk from being identified as somebody who's pushing the boundaries a little bit. And so my siblings were really concerned that by me doing what I was doing,
I could
be placing my mother's care in jeopardy. So I was pushing, but I was possibly not pushing as much as the normal Kathy would push, because I was very conscious that if my pushing went slightly off kilter, I had to answer to another set of people who I care about. And you're right, Natalie, I think the biggest lesson is do not sit back. And if something feels wrong, it probably is. And there are ways of responding, and it doesn't need aggression. It can just be that repeat issuing of a stance that this does not seem right under these circumstances. And at no level was it right.
Well, Kathy, we're sending you so much love. Thank you for sharing your story today. And I do personally hope that it does send some sense of support to anyone out there who went through something similar. And possibly for some people, if you feel called to go ahead and share your story with in the COVID inquiry that's going on at the moment, you can do that at covidinquiry.co.nz. Thank you, Kathy, and sending you love and support for your loss and the experience.
Keeping the COVID inquiry honest, it's time for the inquiry sessions.